Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Sheil Kapadia from The Athletic. Sheil, what's going on, man? Thanks for taking time to join us. We appreciate it.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing well. Hope you are as well. And Sheil, we've been talking all morning. It seems like, from our vantage point in the AFC, it's the Chiefs and then everybody else. But if you had to identify the biggest challenger to the Chiefs in the AFC, who would it be, and what would be your reasoning for that?
I think the Bills have taken over that number two spot. I mean, we saw it on Sunday night against the Steelers. Now, we don't want to have too much recency bias and say, all right, whatever happened last week is going to happen. But I look at it in a way that whoever plays the Chiefs has to be a team that can just be incredibly efficient on offense. You know, I don't see a defense in the AFC, really in the NFL, that's going to stop the Chiefs consistently. Now, maybe you get a turnover here and there, a negative play, all those different types of things. We know in one game there's going to be some randomness, but I feel like you really have to be able to go up and down the field against the Chiefs and really win a game in a shootout. And so to me, the way Buffalo's offense is playing right now, the firepower they have at wide receiver, that would be the team I would have in that number two spot.
What about the value, Sheil, of possessing the ball? Along with, you know, like you said, you're going to have to score. But you know, when I look at the Titans, just the idea that you can maybe just reduce the Chiefs' possessions a little bit with what you do, which is unique in the NFL.
Yeah, there is a little bit to that. You know, I think at times that can probably be a little bit overrated. You know, I think in probably a typical game, each team is going to have around 11 possessions. And really, if you look at it, even in games where teams have tried that strategy, you know, you might get them down to 9 possessions, but is that really going to be enough? You know, it really would come down to, are you scoring touchdowns on those possessions? I think it would help to be aggressive. But, you know, the Titans are a team that are right there, really, with the Bills in terms of offensive efficiency. Now, with the Titans, my concern would be that they have such little margin for error because the offense has been fantastic. I mean, I trust them as much, like I said, as Buffalo, but with their defense and their special teams, again, in a one-game sample, can they create a couple turnovers? Can they be okay? Yeah, but overall, those things, that's what stood out with Tennessee to me this year, is that just the offense has such little margin for error.
Sheil Kapadia from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Sheil, like, just switching over to the other conference, as you look at the NFC right now, obviously Green Bay, number one overall. New Orleans has been without Drew Brees the past few weeks. The Rams, very solid on both sides of the ball. Who would be your favorite in the NFC right now?
Geez, that's tough. It's so much closer in the NFC. I think I would, you know, if Brees comes back, I think I would probably like the Saints a little bit. I think they're probably the most well-rounded of all those three teams. The Packers' offense has been lights out all season long, but if you look at their defense, it really hasn't been great. Teams have been able to move the ball against the Packers, and I think Packers fans have that playoff game from last year where Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers produced 250 yards rushing or something against them. So I don't really love their defense in a big spot. Now the Saints, you got to get Brees back, and you have to see what he looks like. And if he's healthy, I think they can win in multiple ways. They can obviously win with their offense, and their defense for the most part has been pretty good. And then the Rams are an interesting team. You know, I think if you gave me a quarterback there that I trusted a little bit more than Jared Goff, then I would be really bullish on the Rams because their defense has been fantastic. And obviously with Sean McVay, they can scheme things up offensively. I just look at it that if I had a playoff game with the Rams against the Saints, which quarterback am I going to trust more, or even the Rams against the Packers? And to me, you would obviously be choosing Rodgers or Brees in that matchup.
Speaking of quarterbacks, you are well acquainted, of course, Sheil, with the Philadelphia Eagles situation. I know that you've been doing some work on Jalen Hurts, who, to me, has looked pretty good here so far. But what's the future there? Like, where do you think Carson Wentz is going to be moving forward?
Yeah, they've got a couple options. I mean, they're really trying to gather information here in the last month of the season. Now, you know, I think the option that they would probably prefer would be to fix Carson Wentz and get him ready for 2021 because they've sunk a lot of money into him. They've got a $128 million contract, which hasn't even started yet, which they've signed him to. And so their best case scenario would be looking at this and saying, you know what? Yeah, he had a terrible 2020 season, but he had been a good quarterback, above average for the previous three seasons. And let's figure out a way to get him going, whether that means a different coaching staff, whether that means something else, we would see. Now, having said that, if Hurts lights it up here or even just looks really like a mediocre, competent starter in the last 4 weeks, then they really face a tough decision because, yeah, they would certainly take a dead money cap hit if they were to trade Carson Wentz in the offseason. But at the same time, they would be saving money in the future, and they would potentially be getting a draft pick if a team wanted to trade for him. So they've kind of got a lot of balls in the air here that they're juggling in the final 3 weeks of the season. And I'll tell you what, it's going to be a really interesting quarterback market in the offseason when you look at a guy like Wentz, maybe a guy like Matthew Stafford, Jimmy Garoppolo, Cam Newton's going to be a free agent. And so there are a lot of things to keep an eye on. I'm pumped about the playoffs here. But, man, once the playoffs are over, we're going to be going full speed ahead, I think, with a pretty crazy offseason.
Sheil Kapadia from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Sheil, speaking of the offseason, lots of either already jobs open in the NFL or potential jobs that will be open in the NFL with the Jets and the Texans right now open, the Jags, the Lions. Like, what's the most intriguing potential job opening to you from a head coaching perspective in the NFL?
Wow, that is a great question. You know, I'm tempted to say, and this might be more GM than coach, but I'm almost tempted to say Jacksonville, which would, you know, certainly surprise a lot of people. I think you can definitely make the case for the Jets there if they're going to finish with the top overall pick and all of a sudden you're getting Trevor Lawrence. But the reason I identify Jacksonville is because they've got a lot of draft capital. I mean, remember, they traded Jalen Ramsey. They traded Yannick Ngakoue. And so they're loaded up in this year's draft, where you're not only going to have probably the number two overall pick where you can get your franchise quarterback, you're going to have another first-round pick. You're going to have another second-round pick. I mean, you're talking about potentially four draft picks in, like, the top 50, the top 60 there. And so that would be intriguing to me, certainly, from a general manager position. Now, head coaching, I don't know that any of these jobs are ready to kind of go in and win right away. If Detroit keeps Matthew Stafford, then that could certainly be attractive. And like I said, the Jets, I don't think there's going to be pressure to kind of turn it around right away because you're going to be drafting number one overall. That roster really doesn't have a lot of talent on it. So maybe you get a little bit of patience there.
Okay, how about the other side of it, Sheil? You know, people around here are freaked out about losing Arthur Smith. Who are your top maybe, you know, three, four candidates to get head coaching jobs?
Yeah, you know, you look at the coordinators, and I think he's definitely in the mix. Now, I do think sometimes maybe we overrate. You know, I don't think owners look at it and say, who's the best play caller? Let's go out and get him, because there is obviously, we've seen it throughout the history of the NFL, there's more to a head coaching job than just calling the plays, than just the X's and O's. I mean, you got to have the relationship with players. You're the face of the franchise in front of the media every week. You've got to be a leader. You've got to motivate. You've got to know how to coach the other coaches on your staff, all these different types of things. And so I think owners do look at that. But, man, if you're looking at who have been the most impressive coordinators that should at least get a look here, I think Arthur Smith is definitely in that conversation. I mean, I watch the Titans every week and just see the way he maximizes their offensive talent, the way he schemes up explosive plays. This is 2 years in a row now that they'll be probably finishing in the top five in offensive efficiency, and I think that's the way to sustain success in the NFL is to build a great offense. And so he'd definitely be on the list. I think Brian Daboll of the Buffalo Bills, the offensive coordinator, if you're an owner and you have a young quarterback and you see the way Josh Allen has improved from year one to year three, that's definitely going to be attractive to you. And then if you're just kind of looking for a leader, a guy that players will play for, you know, maybe a little bit more in that John Harbaugh, Mike Tomlin mold rather than the sort of offensive guru, then I think a guy you could look at is Robert Saleh of the San Francisco 49ers, their defensive coordinator. I know he drew some interest last year, but I would expect he's a guy that teams will take a look at again this year.
Sheil, last thing for you here. Obviously, most people view the MVP race right now as a two-horse race between Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. What are your thoughts on that? Who's the favorite in your opinion? And where do you think Derrick Henry fits into that conversation as well?
I would go with Aaron Rodgers. I think we'll see what happens here in the final 3 weeks. Certainly one of those guys could swing it. But I think if you look at it, you know, statistically, it's very close. I think if you look at supporting cast, I would say the Packers have a better offensive line, but the Chiefs have more weapons for Patrick Mahomes to work with. I would say certainly the Chiefs have the, superior play caller there in Andy Reid. But, you know, the bottom line is, and maybe it's because I'm an old guy now, but listen, if it's close, you give it to the old guy, right? I mean, listen, Patrick Mahomes is going to have a decade's worth of MVP candidacies here coming up. Aaron Rodgers is, what, 37, 38 years old? So I say if it's close, just give it to the old guy. I mean, he might not have another chance at winning an MVP, and he's had a fantastic career, and he deserves it. So I would give it to him right now. Derrick Henry, I certainly would lean towards giving it to a quarterback over running back, but man, what he's done and what he means to that offense has been spectacular. You know, I was someone who was a little bit skeptical of the Titans being able to replicate their success from a year ago, just given Henry's workload from last year, what we saw the Titans do in the red zone last year. I thought, all right, they're going to regress at least a little bit. I still had them as a playoff team, but it hasn't happened. Both Henry and Tannehill have been fantastic. So certainly if there were a running back to be in the mix, I think he would be at the top of the list.
Sheil Kapadia from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Sheil, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to join us.
All right, take care, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks, you as well. When we come back, we'll dive into a little bit of what we talked about there with Sheil Kapadia. Who's the biggest threat to the Chiefs in the AFC? Who's the best team overall in the NFC? We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. But first, I've got a word from FanDuel. And no one does football quite like FanDuel Sportsbook. All season long, FanDuel is bringing exclusive offers to the best games on the weekly slate. And this week is no different. Something you won't want to miss. New users can bet $5 to win $75 on Justin Herbert to throw one or more touchdowns against the Las Vegas Raiders tonight. You heard that right. $5 to win $75 plus 1,500 odds on Justin Herbert to throw one or more touchdowns against the Raiders tonight. If you've watched that Raiders defense, you know it's pretty likely Justin Herbert's going to throw at least one touchdown tonight in that game. And with FanDuel Sportsbook, incredible odds promotions are just the beginning. They got a simple app, live betting on every game, and exhilarating bet types such as same-game parlays, where you combine multiple bets from one game into a single parlay. And once you win on FanDuel Sportsbook, they get you your winnings in as little as 24 hours. So if you've never tried FanDuel Sportsbook, it's time to get off the sidelines and get into the bet. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. Use promo code ROB, that's R-O-B, to make your first deposit to claim your exclusive odds boost. That's promo code ROB. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Site credit is non-withdrawable and expires 14 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. And for problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789.
I look at it in a way that whoever plays the Chiefs has to be a team that can just be incredibly efficient on offense. You know, I don't see a defense in the AFC, really in the NFL, that's going to stop the Chiefs consistently. Now, maybe you get a turnover here and there, a negative play, all those different types of things. We know in one game there's going to be some randomness, but I feel like you really have to be able to go up and down the field against the Chiefs and really win a game in a shootout. And so to me, the way Buffalo's offense is playing right now, the firepower they have at wide receiver, that would be the team I would have in that number two spot.
That was Sheil Kapadia from The Athletic on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road in the last segment discussing the Buffalo Bills. That's who he's got as the biggest threat to the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC. And Joe, it does feel like it's Kansas City and everybody else. And really, not only in the AFC, it feels like it's Kansas City and everybody else in the entire league. But as our poll question of the day at 1025 The Game on Twitter indicates, what's the biggest threat to the Kansas City Chiefs in the playoffs from the AFC? Is it the Bills? Do you agree with Sheil Kapadia? Is it the Steelers? Is it the Titans? Is it another team? So far on our poll question, almost 400 votes in, 46% say the Titans are the biggest threat to the Chiefs in the AFC, 36% going with the Bills, agreeing with Sheil Kapadia there, 13% going with the Steelers, and 5% just say other. I am interested, like if we did this poll 2 weeks ago, what would the numbers for the Steelers look like? Because I think if you've watched them play,
At least I know it for me. Like, my opinion of the Steelers has dropped dramatically in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, no doubt. As they should have, because they look like crap. How about Shield picking your guy, by the way, for MVP? Did you want to put on your, like, little cheese head and run around the room all excited?
I kind of agree with him.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I've sort of been in default, like, Mahomes mode, but there is a case. There's a case.
The numbers are a lot closer than people would think. They're a lot closer, and Rodgers basically has Devontae Adams. That's about it.
And Aaron Jones.
Right, but he's a running back.
I mean,
Right, but that's a supporting cast. That helps. Right? Everybody rips Tannehill for having Derrick Henry, right?
Robbie, get out of here with your Robert Tonyan slander.
That is true.
Tonyan the Funyan.
Tonyan. Yeah.
Tonyan. Tonyan, Tonyan, whatever.
Tonyan the Funyan. Gross my toes.
Look, I think Rodgers got a real shot to win the MVP. I do.
Yeah. Gosh, poor Mahomes. Going to get LeBron eyes every year. That's what they'll say. Oh, yeah.
It's
like
his third year. Give it to the older guy.
Yeah, give it
Mahomes
to the,
will have plenty of chances.
You know, give it to the defensive guy. Give it to the running back. Give it to the old guy.
Mahomes becomes the GOAT and has one MVP.
Poor Pat.
Rodgers does have 39 Mahomes. Touchdowns and four interceptions. It's the greatest touchdown to interception ratio in NFL history. I mean, that's got to count for something.
That's not bad. He gets, he gets to play the Lions twice a year. That should also count against him. But, you know.
That is true. That's a valid point you bring up there. So Shields going with Buffalo as the biggest threat to the Chiefs in the AFC. Let's go around the table here. Joe, if you had to identify the biggest threat right now to Kansas City, which way are you going?
See, here's the thing. I hear Shield, what he's saying. I made the possession time point. And he's like, yeah, so what, you bring it down to nine. So, okay, you get to try to stop them nine times. And I get that. But I do think that I don't have any stats to back this up, but I think that when you're an explosive offense and you sit there for a long time as your opponent has the ball, I do think there's an effect on a little bit of maybe it gets you a little bit ahead of yourself, a little bit too urgent sometimes. I mean, we've seen it work before where the possessing team against the team with the more explosive offense, for whatever reason, that works. So that's a long way of saying I still think the Titans have a case. I would say, like, if you tell me Adoree Jackson is in the lineup and is healthy and has had a couple games to get his feet wet, I might still go with the Titans. It's the best offense outside of Kansas City, certainly in the AFC. And I know the Bills are explosive right now. Diggs has just been great, but they don't run the ball. Now, does it matter if they score 40? No, but I think the Titans can score 42 and possess the ball.
Yeah, look, I would give the edge to the Bills as well. I do think it's close, and a lot of people will hear this and say, well, the Titans just throttled the Bills earlier in the season in the head-to-head matchup, and I hear that. And Josh Allen, I still don't fully trust Josh Allen. I know he's having a great year, and he certainly is playing a lot better than I thought he was even capable of this year. But I just trust Buffalo's defense more than I do the Titans' defense. I mean, that's to me what this discussion comes down to. You've got to be able to find a way to get at least a stop or two against Kansas City and not just let them tear you apart on that side. And I just don't have any confidence that Kansas City would not tear the Titans apart based on what I've seen. So because of that, I've got to give the slight edge to Buffalo.
All right, so earlier in the show I said Buffalo, and I'm kind of talking my way into the Titans.
Uh-oh.
For a couple of reasons. First of all, Shield Kapadia made a great point in that clip that we heard just now and last segment of teams have to be efficient on offense to at least have a chance against the Chiefs. And the word efficiency has been a trademark for Arthur Smith's offense ever since Ryan Tannehill took over. So the Titans certainly have an efficient offense. They have a more well-rounded offense than the Buffalo Bills. The Bills' offense is probably a little bit more one-trick pony-ish with the passing game versus the running game, where the Titans can beat you in both. And let me also frame it this way. Who do you trust more? Which team do you trust more to go into Kansas City for the AFC Championship and win a game? The Buffalo Bills or the Tennessee Titans? I mean, the Titans, as a team, in the last couple of years, have been a lot more battle-tested. They've played in some huge games and have gone on the road and done it, where the Bills have not had the opportunity to really do that as much as the Titans. And as a franchise, it's been a long time since they've had any sort of playoff success. So I'm kind of talking my way back into the Titans on this one.
I think the Bills win over the Steelers, I think, was big for people to buy into the Bills more and sure. also to abandon the Steelers. But again, that's one game, and I think that was more about the Steelers. Again, I mean, Roethlisberger gives them an absolute gift. I think it was more about the Steelers than the Bills. I like the Bills, absolutely. You know, Josh Allen looked great in that game at the 49ers. You know, they beat the Seahawks 44-34, but their defense, I thought, was going to be better this year than it has been. I mean, that win over the Rams, 35-32, unbelievable lucky win, really. That was an example of their D. And their D, when they came in here that night, now they had some guys missing too, so that's worth keeping in mind. But I just don't think that is that big of a factor. I mean, I think it's still a better defense than the Titans, but the only defense in this whole conference that I feel like could go in there and have a chance to get, you know, multiple stops, maybe like three punts or something, would be the Colts defense. And I don't trust them overall because I don't think that they would do enough offensively. But I've talked myself in the Titans too, because if you're just talking about which offense gives you the best chance to offset your defense's inability to stop the Chiefs, then I think the Titans have the best mix.
Some Titan sunshine blowing going on around here.
Yes, sir.
My goodness.
Well, it's all relative.
That's true. That is true. Switching gears to the other side, it's a different conversation. I mean, Green Bay is the number one seed right now in the NFC. I think, like, trying to identify who the best team is in the NFC is pretty challenging. I mean, you heard Shield talk about, you know, obviously the Saints don't have Drew Brees right now. I think the Rams, they're scary to me on both sides of the ball. Like, I get it. It's Jared Goff, and he's not great. But Sean McVay has done some good things with that offense this year. I think Goff's good enough to run that offense. And defensively, like, I think the Rams have been excellent this year on that front. They've got probably the most dominant player in the NFL in Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey now back there on defense. So I know the Packers are the number one seed, and I know the Saints, they've got a lot of talent. I think the Rams might be the scariest team in the NFC. I really do.
They can win whatever style of game they need to win. They can win anywhere. They have a style of play that can win in a dome, can win in a, you know, cold setting. I would agree with you, Robbie. Give me the Rams in the NFC.
So running the ball and playing defense matters, huh?
It does.
I thought it didn't matter in the NFL.
Well, the emergence of Cam Akers is a difference maker for me with the Rams. Cam Akers in the last few games looks pretty good.
No, I like him a lot. You know, I do agree with Shiel on the Saints. I mean, I guess now Breeze is coming back to practice, but Sean Payton says still a ways away, whatever that means,
yeah,
you know, from playing. But if I knew that he would be back and all healthy with their defense, and then, you know, we just haven't seen the whole thing together a lot this year because of Michael Thomas's injury early in the season, I still think they probably have the highest ceiling in the NFC. But that doesn't mean that they'll get it done. I mean, it's not ideal to be this late and still not sure when you get your quarterback back. But it's probably those three, right?
Yeah.
I mean, unless you want to I can't just totally discount the Seahawks because Russell Wilson. Do we discount the Bucs? Are we discounting them?
Oh, we know you do.
Yeah. Well, I think they're good, but they're not. I don't know. I haven't seen much.
They're
from
way
them.
Too inconsistent.
Yeah, I just haven't seen enough from them in a while now.
Plus, when they play good teams, they just don't look good.
No.
Yeah, and honestly, like, they probably should have lost to the Vikings.
I think there's a good chance Bruce Arians may not be back there next year. I mean, the offense that they run, there's nothing to it.
Yeah.
It looks so simple.
It has to be.
Just run these go routes, and we'll have Brady throw the ball down the field at 43 years old.
It has to be anybody's fault but Brady. It couldn't be that he's not that good anymore.
I'm just saying. The offense doesn't look all that good. When we come back, we'll be joined by Rick Neuheisel, former college football coach, now with CBS Sports. We'll get into the Clark Lee hire with him and all things SEC. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And obviously a big hire made
over the weekend by Vanderbilt, bringing in Clark Lee. And to help us talk a little bit more about that and all things SEC, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in former college football coach, now with CBS Sports, Rick Neuheisel. Rick, what's going on, man? Thanks for taking time to join us. We appreciate it.
It is my pleasure. Getting to talk about Clark Lee is always a pleasure, and I'm so excited for him, and I'm also excited for Vanderbilt. I think they've made a great choice.
So, Rick, obviously, like you said, you've got some familiarity with Clark Lee from your days at UCLA. What kind of a man and what kind of a coach is Vanderbilt getting with this new hire?
Well, I had him as basically what we called a quality control guy, just kind of a do-all-things-be-available type of minion, if you will, in the coaching staff. And he was so good, and he was so efficient and talented that when a spot opened up, I hired him full-time to take on some coaching responsibility, and he was brilliant. There was no question in my mind this guy was going to be a meteor, you know, kind of rise fast in the ranks of coaching. And when we had to disband, you know, as the departing head coach, it's kind of like a captain of the ship. You've got to make sure everybody on your staff finds places to go find employment. I remember being on the phone with Dave Clawson, who is at Bowling Green. He's the Wake Forest coach now. And he kept asking all these questions. And finally, I was sitting there, and I go, Dave, trust me. This will be your best hire, and you will be excited that you did it. And you'll call me and thank me later. And he did. And he actually did call me and thank me later. And I feel the same way about Vanderbilt. Trust me, you've got a great guy. You will call and thank whomever gave you this lead later, because Clark Lee is exactly what Vanderbilt needs.
Of course, you know, with Vanderbilt at this point, Rick, you know, I think it's probably always like this to some extent. Coaches also are trying to find out what the situation is when they're interviewing for jobs. But I think especially probably at Vanderbilt, given the lack of investment over the years, the struggles to keep up, or not even keep up, but just be in this this race for facilities. You mentioned to me the other day that, you know, you talked to Clark and said, hey, like, you can have other jobs here moving forward. We know that he almost got the Boston College job a year ago. Give us a little bit about that conversation and what you got back from him on how he feels about where Vanderbilt's going.
Well, I told Clark that he was in a position now of such prominence as the defensive coordinator for a brand like Notre Dame that he could afford to be patient. He's with a proven winner in Brian Kelly, and if this wasn't his absolute heart's desire, then, you know, given where Vanderbilt sits in the pecking order of the SEC and the likelihood of Vanderbilt, you know, ascending to the top of the SEC East with Georgia and Florida and the resources that are expended there to take their brands to, you know, that level of national prominence, that it would be, if it wasn't his heart's desire, it would be wise to be patient. And he was adamant that he believed his alma mater, given, you know, the energy that he planned to expend and you know, try to create some excitement in and around Nashville for the program, that he could make an effective change and get Vanderbilt to a place where they could compete. You know, he didn't put a, you know, championship label on it, but he certainly believed that they could get to a place where people would be really excited about coming to the stadium on Saturdays. And that's ultimately what Vanderbilt has to do. They're in the SEC. They're laden with resources. The resources are only going to get more plentiful as the new contract kicks in with Disney and ABC. And if Candace Story Lee and all the folks that work there, have a great plan, then Vanderbilt all of a sudden can become like Stanford became. Stanford was a moribund program in the Pac-12 and all of a sudden started playing for big prizes. We see Pat Fitzgerald doing the same thing at Northwestern. Yes, the SEC is a different animal, but if you don't believe it, it can't happen. And I can tell you right now, Clark believes it.
Rick Neuheisel now with CBS Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Rick, obviously Clark Lee still has to worry about his current job, too, at the moment with Notre Dame at defensive coordinator. What's the challenge like, do you think, for him right now, kind of balancing, you know, obviously a huge game coming up against Clemson, but also looking ahead to his next job with Vanderbilt? What do you think that balance is like for him right now as a coach?
He is in multitasking advanced level. There is no question. As a matter of fact, he texted me last night saying, you know, his wife is an emergency room nurse. And she's like, it's triage. You can only deal with what's absolutely most important and forget everything else. So right now he is trying to, you know, figure out a way to stop Clemson with Trevor Lawrence. The last time they did so, they did it without Trevor Lawrence. DJ Uiagalelei was the quarterback for Clemson. He's got to figure out a way to stop them. And if they can, you know, do their part defensively as they've done all year, then Ian Book and company hopefully can find a way to win the ACC championship, which is going to be a, you know, a great feather in the cap of everybody who loves Notre Dame, given that it's a one-year deal in the ACC. So this is a huge opportunity for Clark to take the program not only to a championship in the ACC, but certainly a position in the college football playoff. And then he immediately after the game comes back, and I think he's going to meet with the Vanderbilt coaching staff on Sunday. So you can imagine that when his head hits the pillow, there's a lot going on in his head. So it's a wild ride, but I guarantee you he's just the guy for it.
You mentioned, Rick, Clark as a recruiter, sort of a relentless guy. You know, he's always going to be there. He's going to build trust. Maybe not the flashy personality guy, but a very effective, a very effective approach to recruiting. And schematically, I'm wondering what do you think Vanderbilt will look like? And I guess in particular, I mean, we can see what Clark Lee does defensively, but offensively, what do you think he'll do at Vanderbilt?
You know, we haven't had that discussion yet. He was. When you get into coaching searches, there was always a feeling like the search has to go towards an offensive guy or a defensive guy. And he was of the mind that Vanderbilt was looking for an offensive guy. So I said, well, then you have to have a plan when you're sitting down with them, if you get that opportunity, which obviously he has, about what you plan to do offensively. And what you have the opportunity to build offensively. If you're Vanderbilt and you have the admissions, you know, issues that you have that are going to be a little bit more restrictive than the teams you're playing in the SEC, you have to build something that starts with your offensive line. Your offensive line has to be, you can recruit with anybody in the country when it comes to offensive line, because as you look across the cross-section of kids that qualify at that position, there's going to be a number of good students there as well. So you can, as Stanford did, as Northwestern has done, you can build an offense with your offensive front. And what we're seeing in college football right now is a lot of 12 personnel, which means one back and two tight ends. And you can also build a bunch of tight ends. You're looking at Notre Dame right now. Almost 50% of their offense is in two tight ends. Stanford was a big two tight end. We remember Kobe Fleener, Zach Ertz, Levine Toilolo, Austin Hooper on down the line. So I would expect that the offense at Vandy will be a lot of 12 personnel, and I would expect that you'll model what we've seen be very effective. Even Alabama right now with the injury to Jalen Waddle is in a lot of 12 personnel with that kid Jahlil Billingsley. So this is going to be fun to watch, but Clark will have his eye on the very, very best candidates because Nashville's such a fun town to live in. And I've kind of got my hand up. I said, Clark, wait a minute, don't forget me. because Nashville is that kind of an allure for people in the country to come and hang out. So I imagine that his staff is going to have lots of people on the phone trying to get to Clark Lee.
And Rick, you brought up Alabama there. Obviously a big matchup this weekend in the SEC title game between Alabama and Florida. And we've seen a ton of really good offenses in the last 10 to 15 years, especially in college football. Where does this Alabama offense rank, in your opinion, in some of the greatest offenses you've seen in the history of college football?
Well, it's right there because it can do anything. It can morph into any kind of offense you want it to be. As we just talked, it can be a 12 personnel and just maul you. Najee Harris is, you know, such an effective ball carrier, 1,000-yard rusher, 5 yards a clip, and they can kill you via boa constrictor mode where they just swallow you up whole and, you know, dominate the time of possession, or they can quick strike you because that offensive line allows for anything they want to do. The protection this year for Mac Jones has been off the charts, and you have to wholesale come after him if you're going to try to get to him. And if you do that, now it's one-on-one coverage, and all you have to do is turn on the film and see what Devontae Smith and John Meshi will do to you if you're in one-on-one coverage. So you have to pick your poison, and ultimately you have to be able to score with them. The only team that really gave them a game this year was Georgia in the first half, who scored 24 points and had some wrinkles up their sleeve, or you go to the Ole Miss game, which, you know, went up-tempo and scored with them. What makes this game intriguing this weekend is Florida has that quick-strike ability. Unfortunately for Florida, they can't do it via the running game. Their running game has been, I think, 101st in the country. So they're going to have to throw, which means Alabama can pin their ears back, and we're just going to have Kyle Trask is just going to have to be magnificent to stay in this game. But they do have, with Kyle Pitts and Kadarius Toney and some of the other kids, they do have the weapons to try to keep pace with Alabama, at least for a time.
Who's your Heisman winner at this moment, Rick?
Well, that's the other thing about this great game on CBS on Saturday night, is it's the Heisman game, because the three guys in my mind that can win it are in the game. Now, somebody could come from left field. I mean, Trevor Lawrence could go off on this weekend. Clark Lee doesn't want to hear that, but that could happen. You know, Justin Fields could go crazy this weekend. But truthfully, the race is coming down to the three kids in this Alabama-Florida game. With Kyle Trask, if he throws five touchdown passes and hits the winning touchdown in the end waning moments of the game, he'll be the guy. If it's Mac Jones having a 405 touchdown game, he'll be the guy unless four of them are to Devontae Smith, and then he'll
That's
be the
right.
guy. Actually, the best player in my mind, the guy who has made me say wow more often than not, has been Devontae Smith. I think the guy's magnificent. I love how quiet he plays, how relentlessly he plays, and I just think he's a work of art. Really fun to watch.
See, I love hearing a quarterback give that up to a non-quarterback for the Heisman. That's great to hear.
Well, the quarterback position always is the focal point. We all, and certainly the guys that we've been talking about are deserving. But when somebody just, the degree of toughness for the catches that Devontae Smith has made, the degree of separation that he gets from these guys who obviously know, hey, this is one of the best receivers in the country, and the consistency with which he plays. And then last week, his buddy Jalen Waddle's down, so you go back and catch punts, and he runs one back 84 yards against Arkansas. I'm going, this guy is a freak. I was on the sideline for LSU Alabama. The CBS pregame show came to Tuscaloosa. We did it from the sideline there. And so I'm on the sideline right there with he and Derek Stingley, the great corner with LSU, and I'm going, these two guys are both first rounders. And he went right by him and went like a gazelle right down the sideline, perfect touchdown route, touchdown catch. And I'm going, Devontae Smith doesn't get nearly enough credit in this foursome of receivers. But as a solo act, he's now getting his just desserts, and I think he deserves that big trophy.
Former college football coach and now CBS sports analyst Rick Neuheisel has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexo. Rick, great stuff. We really appreciate you taking time to join us.
All right, you lucky sons of guns who live in Nashville, you enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Rick.
We appreciate your time, Rick. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what Rick had to say there. Also get into the smoke clearing a little bit on National Signing Day for the Vols and the Doors. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Rick Neuheisel for joining us in the last segment. He was awesome. He sounds excited about Clark Lee to Vanderbilt.
So, campaigning for the job?
Maybe.
Sounds like it, right?
Yeah, look, he likes Nashville a lot.
Yeah, kind of a little bit joking, but then I was like, actually, I don't know. I had not considered, Neuheisel was, Clark Lee put him up for the job when Mason got hired. So we're going back 7 years,
yep.
And Clark Lee was going to be his defensive coordinator. So maybe it flips around, and Rick Neuheisel is his OC.
Maybe so. It did sound like there was at least a little bit of interest there. Maybe we discovered something here on Robbie.
Maybe. I'll tell you what, if he gets the job, then that counts as breaking news here.
Yes, it does. It absolutely does. And he agrees with you that DeVonta Smith deserves the Heisman. So do you feel validated now in your opinion of continuing to disregard Mac Jones and bringing DeVonta Smith into the fold for the Heisman?
Well, look, I'm not disregarding Mac Jones, but it was good to hear a quarterback. Rick Neuheisel was, you know, the All-American quarterback at UCLA. Good to hear a nod for someone else. And I agree. You know, we talked about this some yesterday. It's like it's so easy to get lost in that group of receivers who for a couple of years were just – I mean, it's got to be the best collection. I mean, it'll be down the road, and we'll see what they do in the NFL, and that'll be part of it. But how many places have had a collection of receiver talent like that on the same roster? But now that basically it's him and everyone else, it's like, oh, yeah. And even with all that, yeah, more opportunity, but way more attention from the other side, it hasn't mattered. So I agree, though. It's all it's one of those three – and I'm glad we have this game Saturday to help settle it.
Joe, obviously yesterday was the beginning of the early signing period in college football, and a day which, in a lot of cases, has become basically National Signing Day with how the game has transitioned over the course of the past 3 or 4 years in college football. Tennessee, we've talked a lot about Pruitt and the recruiting class, a lot of decommitments in the last couple of weeks, but still ends up with a decent class. Last time I checked, they were 15th. Nationally, I think 6th in the SEC, which is just amazing that you can be 15th nationally and 6th in your own conference. But Jeremy Pruitt, they're able to somewhat salvage this class. They got a nice flip from a junior college commitment. Caden Salter, their prized recruit at quarterback, he officially commits to Tennessee yesterday and signs with Tennessee. So maybe some more competition at quarterback coming in. And then we'll see about Dylan Brooks, their 5-star recruit. He's not expected to sign until the spring, so we'll see whether or not Tennessee can keep that recruit. But all in all, not a bad day for Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt yesterday.
Yeah, and, you know, it was looking a little bit like, uh-oh. And look, hey, if they lost to Vanderbilt, who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe this week looks different, but it kind of, again, it just sort of feels like a lot of stabilizing. And, you know, David Ubbin talked to quite a few of those guys, and certainly they've been hearing from people, of course they have, about the coaching situation, but most of them stuck with it. So, I mean, altogether, you know, it's not a bad class right now. They've got more work to do on it for sure. Ubbin is a big believer in this. Basically, and I forget who first came up with this, but if you think you're a team that can compete for a national championship, you have more fives and fours on your rosters than threes. It's almost always works out that way.
Right.
I know it's funny to even talk about Tennessee, you know, any kind of championship when they can't beat Arkansas and Kentucky. But just the point is, going into this year, they actually were close. They were not far from that level of more fives and fours than threes. And now at this point, they are trending the other way.
Yeah.
And that just shows you how the rarefied air that you have to be in to, you know, to get where you want to get. Because like you said, you fall down to 15th in the country. They were number 2 at one point this summer. They had all this momentum, but you knew that would probably change. Clemson, Ohio State, they make a lot. They get a lot of late commitments, but you know, you still only drop to 15th. Pretty good. 6 in the league. It's just like, man, but that's the SEC.
Yeah, and then Vanderbilt. Like we were interested, and we had Candace Story Lee on yesterday talking about recruiting, and obviously, you know, you fired Derek Mason. You've just now hired Clark Lee a few days ago. And some recruits were hanging on, and then I thought a pretty good day for Vanderbilt yesterday, all things considered.
Well, I mean, it's kind of shocking.
Yeah.
Honestly, just by the rankings, Rivals.com has Vanderbilt's class 29th in the nation.
Yeah.
And that's not normal. Like, James Franklin, one or two, someone can correct me on this, he certainly had at least one top 25 class. There was a big deal about that. Well, James Franklin got a top 25 class. It is not normal for Vanderbilt to be that high. And how do you do it in the year when your coach is fired?
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing. So they are ahead in the SEC. They are ahead of Mississippi State. They are ahead of Kentucky. They're ahead of Auburn.
Yeah. Not a good day for Auburn yesterday.
No, not a good day at all for Auburn. But again, like somewhat shocking to me, and I know, you know, it's one ranking of one class. I know the composite 24/7 has a more like, I think, 40 or 41.
Yeah.
But even that's really good, you know, relative to what Vanderbilt normally is. So, I mean, that's a pretty good building block. And I think you got to give some credit to, like, how did Derek Mason pull that off with all the uncertainty about his job? I mean, I think that's also, you know, an interesting question to ask. But the fact that they were able to retain most of that class also after the firing, you know, I guess you could also say that speaks a bit to, you know, there's appeal beyond – I mean, obviously, there's just the appeal of attending Vanderbilt, and maybe Nashville's part of that too. As part of the, I mean, like last year, Vanderbilt was 49th. That's more about where they are usually and where they have been under Derek Mason. So I do know that I think this probably also speaks some to Javon Hay, who I think will, I would absolutely guess will be retained by Clark Lea, defensive line coach, and a guy who gets a lot of credit out there for what he's doing on the recruiting trail.
And then the rich get richer yesterday, Joe. Alabama, at one point I looked yesterday, of the top 89 recruits that signed yesterday, Alabama had 12 of them. Just ridiculous. They just continue to roll right along with Nick Saban and company. It's hard to catch up.
Yeah, and it's
hard
just
to close that gap.
It's yeah. Well, I've heard it was closing.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know, it's talent acquisition and getting those top-ranked classes, but then you also, even with all the coaching staff, you know, changes there's also just the development and having the cycle they have of development and of opportunity and of veterans who kind of show the way for the young guys and just the NFL. It's so hard, I think, for anyone to match what they can put on the field year after year. And Ohio State, I think, is right there with them. Clemson, okay, so I heard a Clemson recruit yesterday say, you know, this class has got a chip on its shoulder. Clemson's classes, yeah, they are, because they were only six in the country.
Right.
The poor Clemson class, merely number six in the country. So they are going to – these underrated – they're only four stars, some of them. These are only some four stars with some of these guys. It's pretty amazing. You know, LSU 3, Georgia 4. I'm going by rivals right here. But LSU 3, Georgia 4, Oregon 5, which is that's kind of the one up high there. You're like, oh, okay, that's pretty impressive. SC also 8. So the Pac-12, for all we talk about how they're not a good football league, they can still get some talent in there.
Coming in there. When we come back, we'll dive into the Titans matchup against the Lions. Jennifer Hammond from Fox 2 in Detroit will join us. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5, The Game.